from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working with students and families to improve college access and student success for a better West Virginia. West Virginia University, online at wvu.edu.
Good evening and welcome to the legislature today. I'm Andrea Lanham reporting from the Capitol building in Charleston. Teachers and public employees return to the Capitol today. That's after a huge rally this weekend when thousands of teachers, school service personnel, and other public employees weathered the cold and the rain on Saturday for what organizers dubbed a Day of Action rally. A statewide walkout for Thursday and Friday was announced by the leadership of two teachers' unions over a pay raise bill currently pending before a Senate committee, and a plan to freeze the current plan for the Public Employees Insurance Agency. Joining us now to discuss these issues and more are Senate President Mitch Carmichael and Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso. Thank you both for being here.
Pleasure.
Thank you for having us. Yes.
So we have a lot to talk about, but first, the House Majority Leader had a lot of stuff to say about PEIA and teacher pay raises today. Let's listen to his comments first.
I support our teachers, but they're walking out on my children and on my family. I have students in the public school system. Why would they do that? PEIA is zero, no change, no increase, no plan changes. The pay raise is 10 to 12% in 5 years, the largest in decades. Maybe the information's not getting through and down to them. Why would they walk away from the students? The students haven't done anything wrong. We're making progress. Why walk out in the middle of a contract? Why walk out when we're making these good progress? And my bigger question, perhaps, is what happens after Thursday or Friday? What happens then?
They're not walking out on the students. If we don't take care of this and provide a meaningful solution, actually address their insurance problem. That's the main thing is PEIA. The raise isn't enough to cover their premium hikes. And if we're just going to patch it up in a cheap gimmick to get through the next election, they can see through that. Until we provide a real funding stream for it and fix the problem, you know what? They're not walking out on the students. We are walking out on the students. We're walking out on them, and we're the ones walking out on the students.
With all due respect,
so the House Majority Leader went on to say that the plan passed out of the House, the 2111 plan, compounds to about 10 to 12% of a pay raise each year, and he said that union leaders aren't being truthful with their members. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate. I think that the teachers themselves, the only thing I would take exception with, I think the teachers are wonderful people. I mean, they're doing a great job. They're in our classrooms, they're working, they're diligent. They've dedicated their life, really, to improving the lives of their students. The union bosses, this big labor, backroom dealing shenanigans is where the problem is. And, you know, I know it's, you know, kind of maybe inflammatory language, but these people are inciting protest and, frankly, almost walkouts on our students. Some of these kids, by the way, won't have food for the weekend. These are the only meals they get are on Thursday and Friday at these schools in which they provide the meals, and they won't even have meals. They're locking the doors because they're not getting enough. And it's not the teachers, it's the union bosses, and they should frankly be ashamed of themselves.
But is this really a 10 to 12% increase?
Yes. Well, when you calculate the step raises, the steps that are in, now they don't want to call them raises, the union bosses don't want to call it raises, but I'll just ask you a simple question. If you have more money in your paycheck than you had the year before, is it a raise? It's a raise by any definition. And then adding to that the salary enhancements that the legislature is contemplating. The Senate passed a 1111. The House, you know, changed it to make it 2111. I mean, we're dealing around the margins, but at the end of the day, we're talking about $100 million investment from the taxpayers of West Virginia to provide stabilization to PEIA. You name me another insurance program in the world that didn't receive any increase. And that will happen for the West Virginia public employees. You know, we want to do everything we can. You know, we work closely with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle. They have a little bit different view on it, but we, you know, I believe that we will get to an excellent solution, and we'll put this state on a long-term path of growth and prosperity so that we can enhance teacher pay, public employees' pay, and stabilize our insurance issues.
Now, Senator Prezioso, I want to get your reaction
Certainly.
On that as well.
It's totally different. These are not big-time union bosses. The teacher organizations are a conglomeration of teachers and service personnel, you know, the bus drivers and the cooks. They're people that do the job in the school system. You know, I think we can agree on one thing. We have an education crisis. We're not attracting young people to be teachers. The teachers that do graduate in our system are going out of state because the salaries are higher. And the existing teachers that are there, that are doing the great jobs, that have done the great jobs for years, just don't see themselves even breaking even. You know, the step increment, it's coming nowhere close to what they have to pay in deductibles and co-pays and premiums. It's like taking a decrease every year. They're not seeing that little increment that they're getting year to year. And that's the problem we're failing to address. You know, we're talking about pay raises for teachers, to enhance teachers, to have a good living and do their job that they want to do, but we've got to pay them. They've gone years, 4 years now without a pay raise. We've always found a way to come up with some money. Since the 1990s, we've probably had 16 pay raises that we put together and gave them something and let them know that they're worth something. But the bigger problem is, there are classrooms now that don't have certified teachers. How do you get those certified teachers? You pay for them, you have to. The surrounding states, the empirical evidence that we have say that the states around us pay more. And that's the problem. We're not enticing new teachers to come aboard, and we're not paying our teachers that have been there for years with their work. And here's another problem that we fail to see. And the Democrats have been probably at fault at this too. But this is going years back. When we failed to have the money to give them a pay increase, we offered them health benefits and retirement benefits. That was the lesser of two evils. We never thought that health care would escalate 17 cents per year. We didn't think that these retirement programs would take so much money to fund. In lieu of pay raise, we gave them a benefit. Now that we've got to come to the point to pay those debts for the benefit system, you know, they're saying, well, look, we didn't get that pay raise, we took the benefit, but we're not seeing the fruits of what, you know, transpired. And that's the whole problem right there. You know, it's not backroom deals. These are teachers that belong to a professional organization. These organizations are run by teachers. I would venture to say that the leadership of both teacher organizations take more heat than the legislature does.
But do you agree that it's a 10 to 12% pay raise as the House Majority Leader had characterized
it? No, you can't tell what's going to happen in the future. This year, we've got to address an initial pay raise to make an effort to keep those teachers in the classroom and entice new teachers to get on board. If we don't address this issue this year with a surmountable pay increase, the following years aren't going to make a whole lot of difference.
So where does that money come from?
It can come from a number of different places. I mean, I can comb through that budget and give you several areas where we can get money. Even in this year's existing governor's budget, you know, the tourism, the commerce, the tax issue with the inventory tax, there's different ways to get that money. We can piecemeal that together. And look what's going to happen with gas. If we don't get on board with gas this year and allow those pipelines to be put in the ground, and they're going to pump millions of cubic feet of gas through here, it's going to be too late then. We need to take action now, and that's our biggest concern.
Senator Carmichael, Where does the dedicated funding stream come from for PEIA? Are we going to look at eliminating initiatives that you had previously mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I think to my good friend and colleague, Minority Leader Roman Prezioso, I believe that I agree with him 100%. These teachers, people, they're made up of great people. But this aspect of inciting strikes, walkouts, leaving our doors to our schools locked, because for the first year in 4 years, this state has finally going to balance our budget. We've had to take money out of rainy day fund for the last 4 years to balance this budget. As we just begin to turn the corner, there are those who are willing to strike because they're not getting enough. Now, we desperately want to pay the teachers and our public employees more. We're trying to do that, but you can't do it absent a growing economy. And so these initiatives that you speak of, these things like commerce and tourism and those type things, are designed to build an economy that will allow us to grow and prosper. And I think all of us in this room, or hopefully your viewers can agree, this economy in West Virginia has not been prosperous. In fact, we're the 49th in per capita income in America. And so when you look at that and you say this poor state that is just beginning to emerge from these years of economic doldrums, finally scratching, learning to crawl, going to run eventually, is being put in a bind from a strike from our teaching community because they don't get enough of this current pie that we have. We're trying to grow the pie. And I respect my, you know, colleague. He says he can comb through the budget and find these areas. And we will. In fact, we found $30 million to stabilize PEI and make sure that there's no increases to our recipients so that every dollar of increment is additional. There's no more money taking from their paychecks for benefits. It's exactly the same as it was last year. They will have more money in their paycheck. And so, you know, and we should, that's really a cause for celebration. We want to do more, and we'll try to do more, but don't walk out on us just because we're trying to do more and we're giving all we can right now.
Are there any discussions with union leaders to avert this walkout?
Yeah, we've tried to talk with them, and they say, you know, the things that we're doing are not enough. So, you know, what is enough? We're trying.
You know, let's look at the PEIA. We're going back to the rainy day fund and take, what, $29 million out of there? What have you solved? You haven't solved anything. Sure, there's not going to be any additional cost in PEIA, but next year, what are we going to do? The teacher's going to come back next year and say, look, the problem's still here. You haven't addressed it. And I think that's the reason the teachers are so frustrated. You know, they're saying enough is enough. You've got to solve the problem. You can't keep band-aiding the problem and kick it on to next year. You know, they've been told for years, this is your year, this is your year. And their year never comes. And I think it's maxed out to the boiling point right now where total frustration has set in. And, you know, I'm even getting messages from parents, you know, how valuable these teachers are. You know, they do a tremendous job in that classroom. I know when my wife was a first grade teacher, we would make a trip to Big Lots every Sunday after church so she could buy supplies. She would buy pencils, pens, and folders and things like that. And the majority of teachers out there do that. They're not going to let their students go without. They're going to make sure that their classes are funded if they have to take it out of their own pocket. But they've got to make a decent living. We've heard story after story that, you know, they're having to work second jobs. Our teachers shouldn't have to work second jobs in a fast food store on a weekend. They should be home at least settling down. It's very trying being in that classroom. You know, for those of us that have been educators and have been inside that classroom, it's harder to be in there for a day's work than it is going out and doing manual labor. And they just want paid. And they've been told for years, you know, we've played the shell game, we've, you know, boosted their retirement, their health care, and not their salaries, and now it's time, you know, it's all coming into play. And through no fault of either party, I think, you know, medical inflation, who would have thought that it would grow 17% a year? Now it's coming home to roost, and we've got to do something. But we got to keep our eye on the target. The target is this. We've got to attract new teachers, put new teachers in the classroom. Or not, they're going to be cherry-picked by out-of-state, and we're going to lose all that brain trust. And that's my concern.
We only have a minute left, and I do want to discuss this pay raise bill, which was assigned to the Rules Committee last week. Senate President Carmichael, tell me where it goes from here. You said that you wanted to try to work out a deal before you meet tomorrow evening.
Yes, we're in conversations with all the parties that are have an interest in this, and so that we're trying to bring forth a compromise solution on tomorrow. As a matter of fact, tomorrow at 4 o'clock in the Rules Committee. So we want to do everything possible to avert the strike, but likewise, we don't want to be intimidated or coerced into or threatened, essentially, with a strike. You know, these teachers, and God bless them, they make roughly $40,000+ a year average pay.
Starting salary at 32, you yeah. can't attract
for a 200-day contract. And he's right, we need to raise it. But my gosh. You know, we are doing everything we can in this emerging economy. We're just starting to crawl out of this depression where we've had deficits year after year after year. Is now the right time to demand so much more from the taxpayers of West Virginia?
Well, unfortunately, now we are out of time, but thank you both so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Again,
thank
we have Senate President Mitch Carmichael and Senate Minority Leader Roman Prezioso. Next, we take a look at further action back on the House floor today. House Bill 4001 was on amendment stage. The bill is intended to help the Department of Health and Human Resources address fraud within the state's assistance programs by setting work requirements. But opponents say the bill ignores some harsh realities faced by recipients of SNAP benefits. Delegate Ed Evans offered an amendment to preserve a federal waiver, allowing exceptions for certain recipients.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My amendment to the bill is about the flexibility for the state of West Virginia to apply for a waiver to the work requirements in the labor surplus areas. In McDowell and southern West Virginia, there are plenty of able-bodied men and women who would love to have a job. They simply do not exist. In this bill, the state will lose its flexibility to apply for any waivers in these labor surplus areas after October 1 of 2021. If we give up the ability to apply for these waivers, you know, I think we're going to see a real problem in West Virginia.
You know, having been the original sponsor of this bill like 3 years, or one of the sponsors of a bill that was put in this body, is it too much to ask that somebody volunteers that doesn't have dependents? Is it? Or should we just allow them to sit home and do nothing? If they're able-bodied without dependents in a county where I'm guessing it's one of those opioid problem counties, is it too much to ask that they go out and volunteer?
I think that we do need a waiver in there. I used to work for DHHR, and I worked under this program. Yes, there are jobs. I mean, people can go to work if there is work. Yes, they can do community work if there is community work to be done. Yes, they can go to programs and get trained if there's training programs. But most of the time, I have seen that they go through it, and they go through every training program there is, and any volunteer work that there can be, and there still is no jobs, there's no way for them to support themselves. If we leave the waiver in, we don't have to come back to the legislative process. Let it stay there. We can still mandate these people to go to work, but at least the county has the option to apply for a waiver. That's all his amendment is trying to do, and I support it.
Joining us now is senior reporter Dave Misich. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So Dave, tell us a little bit about that bill that we just heard about.
Right. Well, so basically what this bill does is it looks to expand a 9-county pilot program that dealt with able-bodied workers without dependents. Basically, it was trying to get this 9-county pilot program extended to the rest of the state. The state DHHR, as we talked about, I think it was a week or two ago, and explained that the DHHR put out a memo in March of last year that said that this does not significantly increase employment numbers, A lot of opponents to this bill basically saying that it targets poor people and their ability to put food on the table through these benefits. So there's a lot to talk about with this. It goes on to third reading tomorrow and up for a vote in the House, and we'll see what happens with it then.
And the amendment that Delegate Evans had offered, that had failed, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So let's talk about what happened in the Senate today. Today they had the consumer loans bill, which passed out of the Senate.
Right.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Right. I believe that's Senate Bill 398. That bill deals with raising the limits on borrowing amounts for these certain kinds of loans. It went from 37%, anything up to $2,000. It went up from $2,000 to $3,500. There's another interest rate there at 27%, and that's for loans between $3,500 and $15,000, and then a third interest rate capping that at 18% for anything over $15,000. So there was some discussion on the floor there about the bill. We'll take a look and a listen to that right now.
Who would take out a 27% loan for $3,500, and you're going to end up paying over $5,144? But if this bill passes, and you take that same loan out for $3,500 at a 31% interest rate, you're going to pay a finance charge of $1,918 plus an origination fee. You're going to end up paying more than $5,400 for a $3,500 loan. Mr. President, that's outrageous. In light of the bankruptcies that continue to escalate at the current rates, why would we increase these rates?
This is a tool that allows them to keep them going in the workforce, and better yet, it allows for pride. Pride not enough not to have to go to the DHHR or any other agencies and ask for money.
Is the interest rate very high? Sure. Is it something that anybody in their right mind would try to avoid paying that interest rate? Absolutely. But if you have poor credit, you have very limited options. You simply can't go into any bank and get the 5 or 6 or 8% that other people with better means and better credit can get. If you have a desperate need to borrow money, you know, the example used by the Senator from Wood, a transmission, it could be an engine, could be a number of different things. If you don't have access to some kind of credit, you may not be able to get to work. You know, you may not be able to take your kid to school or the doctor's office. This idea that, you know, we should not allow people to service this, what we're actually doing is we're taking away the possibility that they would be able to borrow the money at all, because loaning money is a function of risk.
You know, there's a lot of people, especially in the southern part of our state, that find themselves desperate. And, you know, it just seems like in many cases, you know, they have to do what they have to do to be able to survive, to be able to pay a bill, to be able to take care of their kids. And, you know, my biggest fear with this, Mr. President, is that this gives companies the ability to capitalize on their woes.
And that bill did fail on a 23-11 vote. The only Democrat to vote for it was Senator Bob Plymel.
The bill passed
on 23-11 vote. Senator Plymel voted in favor of it. He was actually a co-sponsor of that bill as well, too. So.
And another bill that the Senate took up today was the sports betting bill, which was on second reading today. And there was an interesting amendment with with PEIA funding with
right.
that as well.
Senator Unger, a Democrat, proposed an amendment that after the first $15 million was deposited into the lottery fund, everything else would go into the PIA stabilization fund. He spoke on the floor about that amendment, and we'll take a listen to that right now.
And what this amendment will do is allow for $15 million that's generated by this sports wagering activity go to the lottery for the bondholders, so we pay them. And then the rest will go into a PEIA fund to stabilize the benefits in the plans, and that the fund will not apply to the 80-20 employer-employee split. Mr. President, of course, the House has acted on doing a freeze in regards to the a rainy day fund, which is not a fix. This would allow for a revenue source to go into PEIA and not affect the premiums.
The nice part about that is it doesn't come into the play of the 80-20 that is currently on the books. And every time that we put more money in, what happens is it drives up the premiums on the PEIA. So that's to be commended. Now, the senator from the 16th, senior senator from the 16th, said that it fixed PEIA, the funding of that. And I disagree with that. It doesn't fix it, but what it does is help supplement on what's going on. There are the amount of money that can be generated at best with this amendment won't kick in till year four with the estimates that we have right now on what the proceeds would be from sports betting. But in year four, then there may be a couple million dollars that could go into it. Year five, then it could be significantly more.
And that's saying that we. And that bill will go up on third reading tomorrow and up for passage. So,
well, Dave, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
And that will do it for our program at the Capitol. Remember, you can watch the floor sessions of the West Virginia House and Senate live starting at 11 a.m. every morning on the West Virginia Channel. And those sessions are repeated for our nighttime audience at 7:30 every evening, also on the West Virginia Channel. I'm Andrea Lanham for the Legislature Today. Thanks for joining us and have a great evening.